Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the Creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Press the number 1 to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also reach us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic Thanksgiving. So what are the origins of Thanksgiving? Well, here we are once again gathered together to give thanks for the King's Feast we host yearly at this time, those who are able to do so. No doubt, those able to participate are thankful this day, for the food set before them. Not that they are not thankful the other 364 days. We've all heard the story of the pilgrim feasting with Native Americans in peace. That's a good story, but it seems it's not quite what actually happened. We have to admit, if you like eating and family, this is a perfect holiday. Where is it? Here's the best I can do without having boots on the ground before or after 1621. From Wikipedia, I thought they told a nice story about Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving, the federal holiday in the United States, celebrated on the fourth Thursday of November. Now, I had a friend tell me recently, co-worker said it was the third, I think he said it was the third Thursday. I don't know. Because this is the third Thursday that it occurred, but it says the fourth. I'm a little confused, maybe because I haven't been following that kind of stuff, but you guys want to get caught up in my personal dilemma. It's not really a dilemma, but I don't know that it's not a big deal because each day is the only day that you really have in your life. But I'm going to move on. It originated as a day of an harvest festival with the theme of holiday revolving around giving thanks and Thanksgiving and celebration remaining a Thanksgiving dinner, right? So you give me thanks. I think you do. I mean, give thanks for the food over the dinner. I spread. The dinner traditionally consists of indigenous cuisine of, well, in America, you know, we got turkey, sweet potatoes, master sweet, squash corn, green beans, cranberries, yaddy, 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 however y'all do it, right? We don't go through all that. No. The New England and Virginia colonists originally celebrated days of fasting as well as days of Thanksgiving. That's days of not eating as well as days of gorging yourself, right? Thanking God for blessings such as harvest, ship landings, military victories, or the end of a drought. These were observed through church services accompanied with feasts and other communal gatherings. The event that Americans commonly call the first Thanksgiving was celebrated by the pilgrims after their first harvest in the New World in November 1621. This feast lasts 3 days and was attended by 90 Native American Wampanoag people and 53 survivors of the Mayflower, which we call pilgrims, right? I wonder what that word pilgrim means. I should have looked that up. Anyway, that's widely known as an earlier Thanksgiving celebration in Virginia in 1619 by the English settlers who had just landed at Berkeley Hundredboard, the ship on Margaret. Interesting. Thanksgiving had been celebrated nationally on and off since 1789 with a proclamation by President George Washington after a request by Congress. Thomas Jefferson chose not to observe the holiday, and its celebration was intermittent until Honest Abe Lincoln in 1863 proclaimed a national day of thanksgiving and praise to our beneficent father, dwelleth in heaven, right? Calling on the American people to also, with humble penance, for our national pervasiveness and disobedience, fervently implore the interposition of the Almighty hand to heal the wounds of the nation. Lincoln declared it for the last Thursday in November. That's 4 weeks. That's the fourth Thursday. So we had on a third. This kind of threw me off. Anyway, and I don't even have holidays, but I'm just saying that one I thought was on the fourth Thursday. So the wounds of the nation. Which nation is Honest Abe referring to? Colonizing, enslaving, genocidal, once divided governments of the North and South? Is that what he's talking about healing? From national, the word pervasiveness, right, means the quality of being morally wrong in principle or practice, deliberate, and stubborn unruliness and resistance to guidance or discipline. That's what pervasive means. So they said, as a nation, they was trifling. And they need an intervention from God. That's what Honest Abe is saying. And they need to be humble or humbled. I thought that was interesting. The interpretation of the Almighty hand to heal wounds of the nation. Lincoln employs the Creator to heal the wounds of the nation, right? That's the North and the South. But they was rumbling. They had a hard rumble, the worst rumble they ever had, on American soil, right, between Americans. Lincoln employs the Creator to heal the wounds of the nation. I guess that didn't include the enslaved and the Native Americans because they were about to receive the full attention of the citizens and government of the United States of America. I guess colonization, enslavement, and genocide was not perceived as morally wrong to the good old U.S. In fact, moral jealousy and unruliness was the vicious dog they set upon the Africans, right? So-called freed Africans and Native Americans after the Civil War. At least Lincoln admits that the country is degenerate, unruly, and unable to change without the intervention of the Creator. So I'm going to give Abe two thumbs up for that right there, because he called it like he saw it. Anyway, goes on. June 28, 1870, President Ulysses S. Grant signed into law the Holidays Act that made Thanksgiving a yearly appointed federal holiday in Washington, D.C. on January 6, 1885, an act by Congress. Other federal holidays, a paid holiday for all federal workers throughout the United States. Under President Franklin D. Roosevelt, that date was moved to 1 week earlier, observed between 1939 and 1941 amid significant controversy. They had a controversy over when to celebrate this Thanksgiving Day. I guess somebody was somewhere else on one of those dates and wanted to make it, something that they fit their schedule. Anyway, from 1942 onwards, Thanksgiving, by an act of Congress, received a permanent observation date, the fourth Thursday in November, no longer at the discretion of the president. Wow. So, Thanksgiving is a time to be thankful, at least for the ability to provide sustenance for your family and to have family to provide sustenance for. It is a gathering to enjoy the people you care most about. Keep that in mind. The people you care most about. Thanksgiving. You gather there. You eat bread. Most people don't eat bread with their enemy. Right? Maybe the guys on The Godfather, they do that. But even then, they're not really being what they say, what they appear to be being. Right? Anyway, I know there is another side to the story. But I'll take a paid holiday any day. Sorry. If I'm a hypocrite or whatever. Hey, if you're going to pay me not to work,
I'm not going to work that day. From pottowattomia.org, the true dark history of Thanksgiving, they say. Woo! Now, they say it a lot, and I'm going to cut into it. Thanksgiving facts and Thanksgiving myths have blended together for years like so much gravy and mashed potatoes, and separating them is just as complicated. So there's a lot of stories, as you know. Hey, we don't have boots on the ground. They didn't have boots on the ground. I guess they did more research than me. The formation of Thanksgiving as an official United States holiday did not begin until November 1863 during the Civil War. President Honest Abe began, right? Abe Lincoln officially established the holiday as a way to improve relations between northern and southern states, as well as the U.S. and tribal nations just a year prior. So improve relations. Thanksgiving, they're going to sit down and eat. Y'all ever seen that? Oh, I don't know if y'all know about the Last Supper in the Bible. Jesus eating with the 12 disciples. They call it the Last Supper before he got betrayed. So I don't even know if Abe coming from there with these Indians, because and the African, we know they weren't even at the table. They were serving the food at the table, but they wasn't at the table. Anyway, just a year prior, mass execution took place of Dakota tribal members. So Abe said, "Listen, I'm sitting down and eat about this, drink, eat, and be merry, and sweep all that stuff under the rug." Even a mass execution of Dakota tribal members. Federal agents kept the Dakota Sioux from receiving food and provisions, right? At the brink of death from starvation, members of the tribe fought back. At the brink of death, of being starved to death by corrupt federal agents, they fought back, resulting in Dakota War of 1862. President Lincoln ordered 38 Dakota men to die from hanging, and he felt that Thanksgiving offered an opportunity to bridge the hard feelings amongst natives and the federal government. He didn't punish anybody from the federal government. So let me get this right, because I'm not the sharpest knife in the kitchen. Let me get this right. Honest Abe is not too bright. Abe, if he thinks he can starve, slaughter, and hang people in defense of being starved and slaughtered, and smooth it over with a hot meal and some beer. No hard feelings is appropriate when you have stepped on someone's foot, had a consensual fist fight, or any minor social infraction. Genocide is extremely monstrous and egregious. Orders the hanging death of those who have been victimized by his people, his government. As usual, it is a high crime to defend yourself against the high crimes perpetrated on you, your people, by the U.S. government. Lincoln has little to no respect for the lives and intelligence of Native Americans. His message is, we can kill you, but you will pay with your lives if you fight back. Now, you see that theme in a lot of behavior of people in so-called authority in this country. Use that thing this George Floyd thing. The guy was just, he just was very comfortable with his knee on that man's neck. And you got these police that shoot people in situations just saying, I fear for my life, no weapon or nothing. It's like, no, basically getting a slap on the hand or getting away with it. So some guys are going to jail for this, starting to go to jail for that, but it's taking a lot for that to happen. But the point is, it seemed to be that kind of attitude going on here with the country. We slap you, don't slap us back. You know, so, and you see it. Honest Abe was employing that, and I'm sure they've done it many times before. His message is we can kill you, but you will pay with your life if you fight back. Accept your defeat, domination, dehumanization, and annihilation over this meat, vegetables, and brute. There is no justice for you. Lincoln is gangster. He sounds like he's a gangster. Didn't the South fight back, kill people? Who did they slaughter and hang after the Civil War? Which general did they do that to? Who did they select to hang from the South after the war? Anyway, they go on to say it was propaganda. This whole thing about Thanksgiving, says Dr. Mostler. It was try and build this event so that you could have a deeper narrative about community building and coming together and shared brotherhood and unity. But you can't have no shared brotherhood and unity if you don't punish people for murdering people, starving people to death. Ain't that what they complain about what's happening in Ukraine and Gaza and stuff like that? Just people just, you know, hurting innocent people and stuff like that, women and children, genocides and stuff. That seems to be just a thing that some people do. That's their mode of operation. Anyway, Native Americans, Europeans, and other cultures across the world have held festivals and special meals in gratitude for bountiful harvest and to reflect on the past year. Many across the Indian country continue these traditions by simply sharing a meal with friends and loved ones without referencing it as a true Thanksgiving. You kind of see why, right? A lot of people don't acknowledge it as Thanksgiving. They say, I'm going to get together with my family and it's going to be about sharing a meal, but we're not going to acknowledge the Mayflower and the Pilgrims because it's holding up this false moment of friendship and completely disregards the genocides and the mass land theft and the brutality that all Native peoples experience. This is what Dr. Mostella said, right? Plymouth and the Pilgrim, they go on to say, textbooks often indicate that the Pilgrims settled in Plymouth, Massachusetts because the harsh winter was approaching and or storms sent them off course from their original Virginia destination. Winter's onset could not have been the reason, however, for the weather would be much milder in Virginia than Massachusetts. Moreover, the Pilgrims spent four weeks until December 26th scouting around Cape Cod, looking for the best spot, says Lowen in the book called The Lies My Teacher Told Me. Well, so a lot of folks is breaking down this whole Pilgrims coming, friendly Pilgrim. This is like I'm just going to keep going on. So historian George Willison said they had debated the relative merits of the Guinea and South America versus the Massachusetts coast. So they had a choice. They might have went to South America, they say. Or somebody had told me that before, recently. So they intended a hijacking, he said. So they came here with ill intentions. The Pilgrims already knew quite a bit about what Massachusetts could offer them, from the fine fishing along the Cape Cod to that wonderful plague. Y'all know what we're talking about, right? If you have anything, you know, any knowledge of what happened, you know about the plagues, right? Which offered an unusual opportunity for English settlement. The plague offered an unusual opportunity for English settlement. The plague, you know what happened after the plague? People die. Many people die. You move in, right? So that's what happened with the plague, right? So disease, prior to the European arrival, America's indigenous did not experience illness attributed to livestock, overcrowding, or poor hygiene. Before the Europeans came, the indigenous people of the Americas didn't just die like that from plagues and diseases from livestock, overcrowding, and poor hygiene. Residents of Northern Europe and England rarely bathe, they said, believing it unhealthy, and rarely remove all of their clothing at one time, believing it immodest. So it's immodest to remove all your clothing at one time, but it's all right to massacre people, starve people. Somebody help me out with that. Anyway, the pilgrims smelled bad to the Indians. Who would have thought that? Squanto tried without success to teach them the bathe. Squanto, y'all know him. That's the guy that's teaching them a whole lot of stuff, right? How to survive, right? 3 years before the pilgrims landed, English and French fishermen transmitted diseases to tribes as they came ashore to find fish, water, firewood, and capture Native Americans for slave trade. All right, so that means they took people from here, took them to England. Within 3 years, the plague wiped out between 90 to 90% of the inhabitants of coastal New England. 90 and 96%. That's a whole lot of people. That's just like people just lying around dead, right? They said those who did survive left their community to join others, bringing the illness along with them. So they took the disease to them, other people. This caused many Native Americans to perish. Once the pilgrims did arrive in 1620, the epidemics across Indian country were far from over, they said. So, throughout the history, religion has served as a means of justification and for the English separatists, right? They believed the widespread death and devastation of Native Americans due to disease was divine providence and that God willed them to take over the land. So you might remember that story in the Bible where they had to put the blood over the door and the first child died and the plagues and stuff like that. So I guess they're trying to tie this into some biblical, to the Creator. God just wiping these people out because they don't believe as they believe. And so he's going to clear it out so that they can come live there. Right? By the time the native populations of New England had replenished themselves to a degree, it was too late to expel the intruders. The colonists had not been able to occupy lands already cleared by Indian farmers who had vanished. Colonization would have proceeded much more slowly if they were not able to do that, right? These people didn't die. This is what helped the Europeans take over the land, occupy land here in the, because people were dead. Whole tribes. Indian culture had not been devastated by the physical and psychological assaults it had suffered. Colonization might not have proceeded at all, writes Lowen. L-O-E-W-E-N. They say Squanto. They got his real name in here. Tis Quantum and the Wampanoag. They say the story of Squanto, a member of the Wampanoag tribe, is much less innocent than the narrative that he assisted the pilgrims, which teach them how to grow the crops and take advantage of North America's bounties, how to just live and live off the land, right? How to survive, right? They said that ain't the way it went. It went that way, but not all the way that way. Something like that. 6 years before the Mayflower arrived in present day Massachusetts, a slave trader captured Squanto and a group of Native Americans. With help from the Catholic Church, Squanto escaped and found his way to England, where he learned English. He eventually returned to North America in 1619. While Squanto was overseas, New England's indigenous experience and a monumental death rate, right? The New England's indigenous experience, they had a plague over there, right? With some communities losing nearly every tribal member to the decimating effects of the European diseases, right? So, I mean, now we know that it was European. I'm trying to see if did they even know that these diseases was coming from these Europeans. because it seemed like they would have stopped that. They would have stopped fighting and said, hold up, we got to handle this right here. And then they handle that, then they continue fighting each other. I don't know. But upon returning to North America and his village of Patuxet, P-A-T-U-S-E-T, he found only piles of bones of his fellow tribesmen killed by the plague. He realized he was the sole survivor of his village. This illness spread so quickly that many local tribes never had time to bury their dead. How did this guy even survive being in England? If the disease came from them, how did he not die going to England? That's interesting. Or any slaves they took there. How did they even survive there? Anyway, but we know viruses work different ways. Some people get, like, even with COVID, people can have it, and some people in the same household don't have it. So then you have the comorbidity, morbidity, and stuff like that. But I don't know. But the near don't have boots on the ground. We definitely didn't have any scientists monitoring what was going on. Only thing we know for sure is that the Europeans came, gave these diseases to these people, and these people died like spray and raid. Right? So Squanto, he realized he was the sole survivor of his village. The illness spread so quickly that many of the local tribes never had time to bury their dead, because I guess they was getting up out of there. Squanto's village was once thrived. The pilgrims established Plymouth Plantation where his village was, right? Where they once thrived. Who was he? The Patuxet, whatever. P-A-T-U-S-E-T, where they once thrived, the pilgrims established Plymouth Plantation. All right? The Wampanoag lost up to 75% of its people, while a nearby enemy tribe, the Narragansett, did not. Wampanoag leader Masserot pilgrims as the possible allies against the Narragansett due to his English speaking. So he identified with the English speaking foreigners, right? Simply because of the language. Masserot used Squanto as a translator, though the Wampanoag leader did not trust his fellow tribal member and held him as a prisoner. So, I mean, they both speak in English. So, I mean, why he don't trust Squanto? Shoot, they both speak in another man's tongue who appear to be moving on their lands, right? Rather than continue a life of servitude to Masserot, Squanto established himself as a key resource to the pilgrims, teaching them how to survive. So he basically got the protection of the pilgrims, right? See, I'm not living in a life of servitude. He was instrumental. What's the names? And helping the Wampanoag make a treaty with the Europeans, the pilgrims, against their enemies. And vice versa. Your enemy, my enemy, my enemy, your enemy. It was against the Narragansett, the Wampanoag against them. Squanto travels acquainted him with more of the world than any pilgrim encountered. He crossed the Atlantic perhaps 6 times. That's why they ain't trust him. Twice as an English captive, had traveled in Maine, Newfoundland, Spain, England, as well as Massachusetts. So Squanto probably was talking English as good as English. All this brings to us Thanksgiving, they say. The pilgrims celebrated their successful harvest in 1621 by shooting their guns in the air, boop-ba, 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 which caused Maserat to bring together warriors and prepare for battle. What? Here they come. I knew this was going to happen. Instead of the fighting, the Wampanoag and the Pilgrims worked together to prepare a feast. They came running out there to rumble because they heard the gunshots. And as you got there, the guys were fixing some grub. So they said, okay, they ain't trying to rumble. I said, y'all want some? So they started eating. But they didn't trust each other. In an article published by Indian Country Today, many natives continue to gather at Coles Hill near Plymouth Rock and remember the losses experienced for over the past 400 years through the National Day of Mourning. That's what it is to the natives, America. Maserat, this action by Maserat was perhaps, they say, our biggest mistake. We, the Wampanoag, welcome you, the white man, with open arms, little knowing that it was the beginning of the end. So, I don't even know if it's a short story. The short story, Maserat allied, well, he failed to see the big picture. Trusted his foreign enemy against his indigenous enemy. Due to Maserat's English speaking, he saw the totally foreign disease bringing European pilgrims as possible allies against the Narragansett, the people who looked more like his people, lived more like his people, and had not spread a plague decimating the East Coast tribe. It don't look like the people who spread it. If Maserat did not trust his fellow tribal member, right, Squanto, why would he trust the people who indoctrinated his fellow tribal member? I'm a little confused. I guess the gulf of the perception of tribal identity and the hatred facilitated by the blood feud between the Wampanoag and the Narragansett blinded them from seeing the forest from the trees, or at least perceiving the need to stop the spread of the disease spreading newcomers to save their own lives. Maybe they did not make a connection between the disease and the Europeans and attributed the plague to some higher power. I don't know. I have boots on the ground. Squanto was ostracized from his own people after his captivity and apparent indoctrination into European culture and ideology. So he decided to mentor the survival of the Europeans and was instrumental in making the treaty of false peace between the Maserat, who was the chief of the Wampanoag, and the Europeans, the Pilgrims. Sometimes the enemy of your enemy is not your friend, particularly if that enemy is not your friend. Maserat and Squanto made a deal with the devil, and the devil always wins when you shake his hand. They say history is the best teacher. Sometimes history is a cruel teacher. Sometimes history lies. It is best to assess what is in front of you and behind you to see where you are going. Remember, hatred will impair your ability to make sound decisions, the hard decisions, and it will definitely prevent you from perceiving a need for unification. Ways to combat the false narrative they go on. Did I say who this article was from? I don't believe I did that. The article is from, I did. Patawatomi.org, right? I did say that, right? I'm going to give these people their credit. So they talk about while many will continue to gather together and loved ones to celebrate, right? Recognize the gifts provided since the year before, incorporating traditional ingredients, recipes, as well as teaching the factual history can go a long way in healing and restoring the native narrative within the American culture. So they basically say, tell the truth about what happened. Stop with that friendly pilgrim stuff and, you know, friendly Indian stuff. And these guys didn't trust each other. As you can see, they were shooting off the guns. They heard that, and they got ready to go over there and kill them. Right? They went there, and they wasn't trying to do it. They sat down and ate. Guys were at odds. Excuse me. So, for the Smithsonian, Clara Bogus is a journalist and former print intern, right? Talks about the myth of Thanksgiving. Just in case you think I'm just pulling this out of the air somewhere. What is the Thanksgiving myth? The myth. The myth is that friendly Indians, unidentified by tribe, welcome the pilgrims to America, teach them how to live in this new place, sit down to dinner with them, and then disappear. They handed off America to white people so they can create a great nation dedicated to liberty, opportunity, and Christianity for the rest of the world to profit. That's propaganda right there. That's the story. It's not about Native people conceding to colonialism. It's bloodiness and, in many ways, an extension of the ideology of manifest destiny. What the hell is a manifest destiny? Manifest destiny is the idea that white Americans were divinely ordained to settle the entire continent of North America. So that's like God gave it to them. It's kind of like the Israel thing. So God gave land to Israel. I think Canaanites were there first, but he gave it to Israel, so he kicked them out or whatever. Well, I don't know how that all goes, but kind of like that kind of a thing. I don't know. So the ideology of the manifest destiny inspired a variety of measures designed to remove or destroy the native population. So these Europeans were operating on the idea that, hey, we're supposed to take this, and we have to either change them or get rid of them. And they did both. They tried to change them, convert them to Christianity, to the cultural norms, lifestyles, dress, speech, look, education, and so forth. So, what are the most poignant inaccuracies of the story? Like, the things that just, oh, man, this is really bad, right? Say one is that history doesn't begin for Native people until Europeans arrive. People have been in America for at least 12,000 years, and according to some Native traditions, since the beginning of time. And having history start with the English is a way of dismissing all of that. I don't know if you guys ever heard of it, but there are pyramids in the North and South Americas. You know how old those are, right? The second is that the arrival of the Mayflower is some kind of first contact episode. It's not. The Wampanoags had a century of contact with Europeans. It was bloody, and it involved slave raiding by Europeans. There's a guy named Dan Calloway. Dan Calloway, somebody talks about people coming here, taking people from here, taking them back to England, Europe, wherever. enslaving them. And maybe more Wampanoags, when the pilgrims arrived, spoke English. So they were very familiar with the English people. They had already been in Europe and back and knew the very organizers of the pilgrims' venture. So these wasn't no backwoods kind of like folks they dealing with. That's what they saying. That's what the Smithsonian lady is saying. Lady from the Smithsonian. Journalist for the former print intern from the Smithsonian. Saying these guys wasn't speaking of something they didn't understand who they was dealing with. They had an idea who they was dealing with. At least their language. Using a shared dinner as a symbol for colonialism really has it backwards, she says. The Wampanoag leader, they call him somebody else here, Quissamequin, reached out to the English at Plymouth and wanted an alliance with them. But it's not because he was innately friendly. It's because his people have been decimated by the epidemic disease, and Quissamequin sees the English as an opportunity to fend off his tribal rebels. So this man is politicking, right? That's what we call politicking. All right, so they're politicking already. So that's not the stuff of Thanksgiving, you know. The Thanksgiving myth doesn't address the deterioration of this relationship, culminating in one of the most horrific colonial Indian wars on survival and adaptation over the centuries, which is why they're still here, despite the odds. She's saying that they try to wipe these cats out, indigenous folks. Thanksgiving feast. How did the Great Dinner become a focal point of modern Thanksgiving holiday? For quite some time, English people have been celebrating thanks that didn't evolve feasting. So they've been celebrating Thanksgiving that didn't evolve eating. I guess you should be able to do that. They involve fasting and prayer and supplication to God. That seems like a more noble thing. Fasting is good for you. And if you're a believer, well, your knees is good for you too. In 1769, a group of pilgrim descendants who lived in Plymouth felt like their cultural authority was slipping away as New England became less relevant within the colonies and the early republic. They wanted to boost tourism. Can you believe that? They had tourism. So they started to plant the seeds, this idea that the pilgrims were the fathers of America. What really made it a story is that the publication mentioning that dinner published by the Reverend Alexander Young included a footnote that said, this was the first Thanksgiving, the great festival of New England. People picked up on this footnote. The idea became pretty widely accepted, and Abraham Lincoln declared it a holiday during the Civil War to foster unity between the North and the South, mainly. It gained some ground in the late 19th century, where there was an enormous amount of anxiety and agitation over immigration. In the 19th century, there was an enormous amount of anxiety and agitation over immigration. I'm gonna keep going. The white Protestant stock of the United States was widely unhappy about the influx of European Catholics and Jews and wanted to assert its cultural authority over these newcomers. How better to do than to create this national founding myth around the pilgrims and the Indians, inviting them to take over the land? This myth-making was so impacted by the racial politics of the 19th century, they say. Indian wars were coming to a close, and that was an opportune time to have the Indians included in a national founding myth. You couldn't have done that when white people were reading newspaper accounts on a regular basis of atrocities, violence between white Americans and Native people in the West. During Reconstruction, Thanksgiving myths allowed New Englanders to create the idea that bloodiness, colonialism, and their religion was the origin of the country, having nothing to do with the Indian Wars and slavery. Americans could feel good about their colonial past without having to confront the reality, dark characteristics of it. The really dark characteristics of it. So that's kind of like what DeSantos is trying to avoid by not telling the real history about all this colonialism and bloodletting. The discrepancies in English and Wampanoag conceptions of property. So, you know, I remember this. They used to say the Indians had no concept of ownership. It's incorrect. It is widely assumed that Native people had no sense of property. They didn't have private property, but they had community property. And they certainly understood where their people and land started and where it ended. When Europeans came to America to buy land from the Wampanoags initially assumed the English are buying into Wampanoag country. You just live like you come to the United States. You buy some property, you live in the United States, you don't own it. That's not your government, nothing. You, us. Right? Not that they are buying Wampanoag country out from under their feet. So I'm trying to figure out who got to speak English, why didn't they know that? Anyway, imagine. No, we ain't going to go there because I don't have all time to be coming up with all these different scenarios. So part of what King Philip's War was about is Wampanoag people say, enough. You're not going to turn us into a landless, subjugated people. Because once they bought the land off the Wampanoag, they said, hey, this no longer yours. Under their ideology of purchasing land, not under the ideology of the people of the land that they purchased the land from. They dictated. Did all Wampanoags want to enter into alliances with the English? From the very beginning, a sizable number of the Wampanoags disagreed with Quasimenquin's decision to reach out to the English and try to undermine the alliance. Quasimenquin puts down multiple plots to wipe out the colony and unseat him. This is very, very important here, right? Because these people, their strength is divided. Now they fight amongst themselves, and they're saying, hey, man, we got to get rid of them. They're taking our stuff. We got to get rid of them. So the Wampanoags say, let's make alliance with the Narragansetts and get rid of these English, right? Some of them said that. Remember, Marisat, or whatever his name is, didn't want to do that. But this kid... These other Wampanoags say, hey, we're gonna make alliance with our people like us, and get rid of these people who are not like us, who are moving us, them and us, out of our own lands. They've been raiding our coast for decades, enslaving our people, carrying them off to unknown fates. And they can't be trusted. Some Wampanoags believe they cause epidemics, and there were prophecies that this would be the end of the people. Whoa. So you know what this is, right? To disagree, to the degree that the Wampanoags dealt with the English, it was to adjust the power dynamics of Indian country. Basically, to gain their own power. They had to have power over their own land. You don't have power over your own land, that means somebody has power over you. So, during the King Philip War, efforts to unify different tribes against the settlers weren't always successful. These guys were, they were into their heads about who they were, who they weren't, or what they did to each other, and whatever happened between to each other, and it was difficult. I get it. Politics of Indian country are more important to Native people than their differences with the colonists. That was the problem. Their problem with each other was perceived as greater than the problem with the colonists. There were no Indians when the English arrived. Native people didn't conceive themselves as Indians, right? So this is getting to this individualism, tribal identity, and sovereignty, which you can have sovereignty all you want. You still can work with somebody. See, the United States working with the Ukraine and Israel and some other folks all over the country. Right? You can have sovereignty and work together. Anyway, that's an identity that they have to learn through their shared struggles with colleagues, right? So basically that means they had to learn the hard way that somebody was lumping them up in the same basket. It also takes a long time. They have been here for 12,000 plus years, and there are a lot of differences between them. Their focus is on their own people, not on the shared interests of Indians. And very often, what's in the best interest of their own people is cutting deals with colonial powers with an eye towards combating their native rivals. Now, they had it wrong. They had it all wrong. So, the story of King Philip's War and its impact on America from the Mayflower 400UK.org. I'm not going to go through the whole war, but the war was seen as a final attempt to drive out the colonists and is considered the deadliest war American has ever seen. The colonist army burnt the villages as they went, killing women and children. The war decimated the Narragansett, Wampanoag, and many smaller tribes, paving the way for additional English settlements. That sounds very familiar. King Philip's War began June 24, 1675, they said. In a colonial New England, King Philip's War begins when a band of Wampanoag warriors raid the border settlement of Shaanxia, Massachusetts, and massacre the English colonists there. It's a sad day when women and children suffer because of the actions of men. And we see that happen in the, Ukraine, and we see it happen in Israel. We see it happening in the Congo, right? Note how history states the reason the war began was when a band of Wampanoag warriors raided the border settlement. That's called controlling the narrative. The actions preceding the war caused the war. That starts the war. It was the aggression of the pilgrims, the Europeans, that led to the attack on the border settlements. If the man tells you when you buy some land from him, you own the land, but it's under our jurisdiction. That's the way it is. But this man said, "The hell with you," and started to defend. I guess he defended his land and continued to take more. He just bought more land, said it's mine, it's no longer yours. And they was not selling, giving them their authority over their land. They was giving them authority to use the land. That's not hard. You don't need to be a genius to figure that out. The Wampanoag went on to teach their visitors how to hunt, plant crops, and how to get the best of their harvest. This is from the Mayflower 400UK.org. This is another interpretation of what happened. Saving these people who would go on to be known as the Pilgrims from starvation. So they say the Wampanoag saved these people from starvation. However, over the years, the colonists continued to expand into Wampanoag lands and relations soured, which came to a head following the death of Quasimequin some 40 years after the Mayflower had landed. So, how does the telling of these events differ from other existing scholarship? Well, it's a lot different than what I heard. Because, you know, so the way I heard the story, there was no violence involved, there was no distrust involved. When I first heard the story, after I got older, there was distrust, there was deception in the mix. But the Indians were naive, but they weren't that naive. Seems like they knew. They couldn't trust these people. Some of them didn't trust them at all, wanted to wipe them out. Others wanted to use them to wipe out their enemies. The main difference has to do with King Philip's War, writer says. The question is whether Native people led by Matakamet, or Philip, as the English call him, were plotting a multi-tribal uprising against the English. I think she said, I think they were. Some of her historian colleagues think it's a figment of paranoid English imagination. But she said she had a lot of warning signs building in the 1600s and the 70s from Englishmen who lived cheek by jaw with Wampanoag people and were terrified of what they were seeing on the ground. Somebody was saying they seen a pattern of political meetings between Native leaders who hated each other, and yet they were getting together over and over and over again. So sounds like they were split, and the ones who wanted to get with the Europeans, they made their little deal, and the ones that didn't, plotted. They said, this is tending to see English as the devils in all of this. I don't think there's any question they were in the wrong. Yeah. But it doesn't let them off the hook to say that Native people wouldn't take it anymore. And regardless of that, I think the evidence shows that Native people had reached their limit and recognized that if they didn't rise up immediately, they're going to be come landless, subordinates to English authority. What's that song go? Too much, too little, too late to ever try again. That's what that was. That was, that ain't even too much. That's just too little, too late. A day short and a dollar, a dollar short, day late and a dollar short. It was too late. The only thing they could do was look bad, slaughtering people. Anyway, this is about a country. This is about as contrary to the Thanksgiving myth that one can get. That's the story which we should be teaching to our kids, they say. We should be learning about why Native people reached that point, right? Rather than this nonsense that Native people willingly handed off their country to the invaders, the Pilgrims, right? Well, you can see DeSantis is blocking all that stuff. The slavery, he definitely going to block that right there. Anything that makes white people look bad, look like monsters, he's going to block that down in Florida. But the truth will set you free. You need to get past that, because if you're not that way now, don't worry about all what the history says. That's true. That's your history. Don't worry about it. Show that you're not that monster today. That's what the DeSantis should be worried about. And anybody in the cahoots with him in that decision-making. At some point, You know what I'm saying? Like third graders, yeah, maybe not third grader, but if they get a little older, they didn't get the truth. And don't sugarcoat it, even in the short version. Say they took the land from the people. So, I don't know. I tied this into the African experience, which depending on who you are, you could tie that. That it's already tied into the so-called Black African experience, since they were here in Columbus. And amongst some people say amongst the people of these tribes, taken into these ships and so forth like that. Can't get into that right now because that's a whole new different show. Dane Calloway, you can check him out on the internet. He's rapping all about that stuff, breaking it down for you. Anyway, like the Africans and anybody else who refuses to unite, perceive a common threat, weigh the so-called benefits of their tribe as greater than the benefits of all tribes, you will be conquered more easily than if you were united against the same threat. They had eyes, but they could not see that someone, the Europeans, the pilgrims, were lumping all Native Americans in the same flaming ball of fire of consumption. Their division, tribal identity, and differences were used against them, all of them. Their reaction time was slow or even too late. Their enemy had grown to be their conqueror. The rest is history. Divide and conquer is the optimal method of conquering an enemy that is greater in number than you. The first thing you do is divide them. Create dissension. Dissension creates chaos and internal strife, war, which impacts on their ability to organize and focus on you. Focusing on self at the expense of others is a detriment to all. It is inhumane and unintelligent. It is cultural, ethnic, tribal suicide. How could Europeans have been successful in colonizing Africa and North America if the continent was united? How could they have been successful if everybody was together saying, hold it right there, Border Patrol, right? Who are you? You know, ever since you came, we've been getting sick. So no more you can come in here. Historical and tragic lesson should have been a part of the African consciousness, Native American consciousness, of those in their homeland and abroad. Though there are some who value unity, there are too many who do not and remain divided on many levels. It is past time we put the necessary work in to pave the way to a brighter future. It may be painful. Pain won't last forever. It will be enlightening, informative, nurturing, and encouraging if only we allow it to happen. Disunity is the equivalent of placing the shackles on your own hands, feet, and mind. I just want to say that anybody within an earshot, each one reach one, each one teach one, and not just saying at the end of my show. We got to stop being divided. It's going to hurt to bury some of these wounds, to let some of this stuff go. I get it. But we got to let it go in order to move forward. It's holding us back on all kinds of levels. And even for people who are able to do that, for the ones that are not, it's holding everybody else back because you create an environment where it's difficult to thrive. It's more difficult to thrive. We would have more successful people if we created an environment where we live at, where thrive, where we felt safe, where we're being fed, where we're warm, where we have our clothes, where we are not senselessly criticized for not having on the latest sneaker or some of this bull crap that's going on with social media. But we're not, people are not trying to shame you for something that you don't even need to be ashamed of. So what you should be doing is using social media to uplift your fellow brothers. That's what you should be using social media to do. Say, so-and-so, he just did this, he just improved his grades. So-and-so, going to so-and-so, got a job. So-and-so, turned his life around. That's what you should be using social media to do instead of chopping down everybody. We are so divided, or we're so divided at the individual level, we can't even get to the unity of the larger of population, which we need to get to like yesterday, a century or two ago. Probably had more unity back in during the slavery days than we got now. I don't know. I just threw that out there. Had no business saying it. But I wonder if we did. I mean it. Each one. Teach one. We're in the show a little early tonight. <'Cause I'm not coughs> excuse me. Not really feeling well, as you can see. But anybody have anything you want to say? Speak now, forever hold your peace. We have 16 minutes left. And if no one's going to say anything, I'm going to end it today, tonight's program. I want to thank Blog Talk Radio, We Talk Productions, Mr. Kenneth Jones, the creator, my parents, all my callers and listeners. Attention to the show. Please feel free to have a conversation about the show with other people. In between, you know, talks about whatever you'd be talking about. And remember, each one reach one, each one teach one. And with that, I'm going to sign out for the night. As always, peace.
Not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.